Air America Radio and the Interfaith Alliance Foundation present State of Belief, Religion and Radio Done Differently. Here's your host, the Reverend Welton Gaddy.
Welcome, everyone, to State of Belief. To many of our listeners, we wish a Happy New Year and a blessed Ramadan to many more. I'm Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance, broadcasting from the Center for American Progress Studios in Washington, D.C. Today, it may not get the same recognition as Labor Day or the 4th of July, but Monday is Constitution Day. And we'll talk to a truck driver who's on a coast-to-coast mission to make sure Americans remember what comes after we, the people. Also, which presidential candidates do voters think are the least religious? And why the answer may be an important step in the electoral process. Plus, I'll do my very best impression of Alex Trebek when one of our listeners calls in to play Choose the News. But first, what's going on in federal prisons that has us concerned about threats to religious freedom? This past week, the New York Times reported on a systematic purge of religious books, tapes, CDs, and videos from prison chapel libraries. The decision was instigated by the Federal Bureau of Prisons in response to administration fears over materials that could encourage terrorism. But as the Times report makes clear, chaplains are not being told which books they have to remove. Instead, they're being told they have to remove everything. Everything, that is, except books and materials that appear on a list approved by the government. Do we now have a religious doctrinal reader in the White House or somewhere else in this administration? The Bureau of Prisons says it used anonymous experts to produce the list, selecting material for 20 religious categories. But the books chosen for the list only reveal the biases and blind spots of those who choose them. You know, it's hard to imagine that anyone would think great theologians like Reinhold Niebuhr or Avery Dulles would incite radical behavior, but none of these experts thought to include these highly respected religious thinkers on their list. And as I said, if it isn't on the list, it isn't allowed in the prisons. What's worse, some prisons don't have money to purchase new materials for these chapel libraries, and so when non-approved books are removed, very little remains. Some inmates have filed class action lawsuits, claiming a violation to their rights to the free exercise of religion. And many prison chaplains have also spoken out against the book purging. Right now, we're joined by Dr. Britt Minshall. He's a former law enforcement officer who served as an agent for Interpol, the International Law Enforcement Agency. He's now the senior pastor of the Cathedral Church of St. Matthew, a United Church of Christ in Baltimore. He has ministered to the incarcerated. Britt Minshall is with us on the phone from Maryland. Pastor Britt, welcome to State of Belief.
Well, thank you for having me on. Glad to be here.
And I understand you're a member of the Interfaith Alliance, so this gives even more credibility to this interview.
Okay, thanks.
I know that you've been involved and are involved in prison ministry. What do you think is the motivation for this initiative?
I have been, of course, obviously as a law enforcement officer for 16 years, was very, very much active, involved in jail contact, etc. Now that I've been in the pastorate, especially since I've been in Baltimore, my church is an inner city church, and so I usually have actually church members in jail at any given time, and in the state penitentiaries, much more so than federal, although I have had two of my people in the federal penitentiary at Petersburg, Virginia. So I've kept up the contact, and the one thing I would like to say before we go anything any farther is that American prisons are in horrible shape. We will not fund them. It is absolutely a disgrace how our country is funding and handling and managing our prisons.
Well, out of that kind of profound conscientiousness, how do you see this whole thing about purging books from prison chaplains' libraries?
Well, now, of course, this is in the federal system only. Number one, I would love to see the list of what the books are. I have been in prison libraries, and it wasn't really looked at when stuff comes in. And I can say that there are some pretty violent literature, some, not much, I'm sure, in these libraries and in the hands of the folks that are in the penitentiary. These folks are just breeding grounds. They're confused. They're mistreated. They're in a horrible situation, and they are ripe to be led in any way, one way or another. In saying that, I have come across, and I think this is where the problem is more than the literature. There are people who go into the prisons to do prison ministry. 99.9999% of them, Wilton, are wonderful, dedicated, loving people, Islam, Baha'i, Christian, it doesn't matter. But you've got that minority from the Aryan Church of Jesus Christ and God knows what and Islamic factors who try to skew things towards a violent end. I think we need to look more at the people that go in rather than the literature that goes in.
Well, Pastor Brett, why not? I mean, I understand exactly what you're saying, and as to the list, just so our listeners know, those lists are not available. But why would there not be just an approach of saying, ban any books that have a tendency to incite terrorism among prisoners, but not to ban books that deal in education and theology and spirituality?
Well, that's right, and I agree with you 100%, and I thought that's what they were trying to do, but I, too, have been trying to get a hold of the list. I've been trying for over a week. I understand this has been going on, which I did not know, for over a year, and it's just why is the list not available? That really concerns me.
Is there any possibility that we're looking at another recognition of kind of the established religion in the nation, which seems to be Christianity and seems in some ways to be evangelical Christianity? We have great misunderstandings and prejudice against Islam.
Oh, yeah.
Is this targeted at Muslim books but made to look good by including some Christian literature as well?
That's exactly what's going on here. And I'm sure some Christian literature has got to be put in there to clean it up. But I guess I'm more worried, to be honest with you, is just if the list would be made public. And I think that's the reason it can't be, because I believe you're going to find that it's loaded with Islamic literature.
Yeah, and I mean, frankly, you're a Christian minister. I'm a Christian minister. I'm also concerned about who's choosing which Christian books. As you know, there's a great diversity in Christian theology, and are we pushing one particular religious point of view in this effort as well?
Well, that's right. That's the problem. It needs to be who's choosing it and, you know, what books are being chosen, because that would tell you a lot. And, of course, under the present administration, we both know that that is going to be highly skewed towards a type of Christianity which I personally don't subscribe to, even though I am actually a born-again evangelical Pentecostal Christian.
Pastor Brett, let me go back to your opening statement about Americans' attitudes and tendencies toward prisons. In this whole discussion, I'm quite sure that there are some people that would ask, well, why do you even care what prisoners have to read? They are people who have committed horrendous crimes in many instances. Why are you all even concerned about prison libraries?
Well, I'm worried about prison libraries, prison infirmaries, prison food, prison overcrowding. What I'm saying is that these are human beings that have no control over their lives. They put their lives in our hands completely, and we are doing a lousy job in making sure that they can live like a human being. You know, and I've said for years, Wilton, that when someone gets convicted of a crime, let's say they're guilty, and there's a lot of folks in prisons that aren't guilty. I know that myself, and I've watched them being railroaded in there over the years. But they're put into a prison, and the penalty is, let's say, 7 to 10 years for whatever they did. The penalty is to be locked in a prison for 7 to 10 years. It's not to be raped. It's not to be mutilated or anything else. They should be, actually, there should be training classes. We ought to go back to the 30s and 40s when we cleaned up our prison and taught folks a trade, taught folks how to read and write and to get better so they can get out, they have a chance. But that's not what's going on.
Well, given your long experience in dealing with prisoners and prisons and your background in law enforcement, how do you see this thing of the oversight of religious materials? Should that fall to chaplains or should it fall to the government?
Well, it certainly shouldn't fall to the government. I think it should fall to the world of academia, the world of theology. Look at each book and to see, in fact, if it is trying to incite, teach a terrorist or incite violence. But I think the prisoner should have a lot more rights to be able to get a hold of all kinds of books. And yes, I think if there's a book in there which is trying to tell a fellow that he needs to accept a certain kind of religion and then go out and kill somebody else, then that book doesn't need to be there. But they are few and far between.
How do you think this issue is going to be resolved?
It's just coming to the fore now. It's all according to who's choosing the books. I think that what's going to happen is somebody is going to bring a lawsuit of some kind to try to get the government to open up to what is the procedure, what are the benchmarks of what literature goes in, and who's doing the choosing. And I think that's the first thing that ought to be done. And I think that could be done rather easily.
Well, Britt, we appreciate your expertise and we appreciate your opinions. We've got a link to your website, pastorbritt.org, at stateofbelief.com. And I have to tell you that having been and now being a senior pastor myself, I kind of envy you having not only the title of senior pastor, but if anyone causes any trouble, telling them that you used to be an agent for Interpol.
Yeah, and that's greatly overblown. But yes, officially, I kind of was. Yes.
Britt Minshall, thanks for being with us on State of Belief.
It's great. God bless you.
I have a few thoughts on this story myself. Friends, this is disturbing news. The government should be in the business of protecting our citizenry, not telling people of faith, prisoners or otherwise, how to practice their personal religion. Even though this is the world's most religiously diverse nation, this administration has repeatedly manipulated and politicized the religious freedom guaranteed by the First Amendment to the Constitution. This initiative not only manipulates and politicizes, it just tramples on religious freedom and borders on thought control, forcing the inclusion of only government-approved materials chosen by a secret committee. Now, that sounds like democracy, doesn't it? Free societies are strengthened and remain free only when freedom of belief is guaranteed, not when it's handpicked by authority and hoisted upon us. There's another name for that. Still to come, restoring the Constitution, one state at a time. And up next, do Americans want a religious president? The results of a new poll may surprise you. I'm Welton Gaddy, and you're listening to State of Belief on Air America Radio.
The Interfaith Alliance, defending democratic values and promoting religious liberty. Learn more at interfaithalliance.org.
My faith and the support of my extended faith family sustained me through a very difficult time.
Welcome back to State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy, and that was Senator Hillary Clinton back in June on CNN's Faith and Values Forum for the presidential candidates. Many of the candidates have been told endlessly by strategists that Americans want to hear them talking about their personal faiths. But a recent Pew Research Center poll showed that voters view Hillary Clinton and Rudy Giuliani as the least religious of the major presidential candidates. Now, you may be asking, why should this concern us? What do personal religious beliefs have to do with a candidate's qualifications for the presidency? Well, I think the result of this poll shows that most Americans may be asking those same questions. Now, think about it. In nearly every national poll, the front runners for the Democratic and Republican nominations are Hillary Clinton and Rudy Giuliani. And while we're constantly told that voters believe a president needs to have strong religious beliefs, these two frontrunners have been selected as the least religious candidates in the field, whatever that means. As I've said before, we're not electing religious person of the year in November of 2008. We're electing the president of the United States. I'm beginning to think people all over the country are starting to say the same thing. Now, another interesting development in the Pew poll was the response to this question. During political elections, should churches and other houses of worship come out in favor of one candidate over another? 28% said they should, but a very large 68% said they should not, and 9% said they didn't know. Now, I'm wondering if that 28% would have answered differently if the poll made it clear that a house of worship is not legally allowed to do that. But I digress. Anyway, these numbers match up with similar polling done by the Interfaith Alliance back in 2001. It shows that when people are educated on the appropriate roles of houses of worship, candidates and campaigns, the legal and ethical issues surrounding endorsements become clear. We're happy about these numbers, but we know that such education is not complete until the number saying houses of worship should not endorse a candidate is at 100%. Up next, the truck driver who's bringing the Constitution on a tour through the states just in time for Constitution Day. I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy, and this is State of Belief on Air America Radio.
Once a week, not enough? Check out our website, stateofbelief.com.
Yesterday, I met with President Bush and informed him of my decision to conclude my government service as Attorney General of the United States, effective as of September 17, 2007.
Welcome back. This is State of Belief on Air America Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. And when Alberto Gonzalez announced his resignation a few weeks ago, now, look, you can stop applauding now so you can hear. I remarked how appropriate it was that he be stepping down on Constitution Day this Monday. After all, because he so willingly disregarded the Constitution in the name of political obedience, Gonzalez's departure serves as a reminder of how much we should value our founding document. One person who agreed with us is Joe Labonte, an over-the-road trucker from Utah. He's a concerned American citizen who's long worried about the eroding of the Constitution. So he's using Constitution Day to kick off a year-long tour across the country that he hopes will re-energize national appreciation of the founders' words. We think Joe's idea is a great one, which is why we've asked him to share it with you today. Joe Labonte is with us by phone. He's on the road somewhere, and he's pulled over to the side of the road to talk with us. Joe, thanks, and welcome to State of Belief.
Well, thank you very much, Reverend, and I really appreciate being here. I'm in Montana.
In Montana, great. Well, from what I understand, you've always had the instincts of an activist. Is that right?
That's correct. Ever since I got out of the service from Nam.
So you were in Vietnam? How long?
I was on an aircraft carrier for 4 years. It was USS Lexington, 6872.
You've just got to tell our listeners about running a United States Senate campaign from the back of your truck.
Yes, I did. That's right. It started May 2nd, 2002. I'd just been working with negotiators to stop a nuclear waste dump. I watched corporations, special interest money washing through the political structure, getting in the way of the a reasonable process that allowed people to have a voice. And I announced I was going to run for U.S. Senate. And my good friend, Reverend Brad Mitchell, Unitarian minister up in Maine, and I laughed. And then we took it serious. And so I couldn't get out of the truck to do it, so I did it online. And I received 1% of the vote by answering League of Women Voter Guide questions and other surveys online.
Oh, that's terrific. I bet you learned a lot about our process as well.
Well, I'll tell you, it's the beginning. I'm on a journey. I'm realizing we all are. We're all on a journey of, because we're here for a reason. There's nobody here that's superfluous. I believe that. And it's many of us, though, we're not on our journeys. We're just kind of treading water or stepping in place. And for me, when I decided to do that, I knew I had to read the Constitution because I realized I swear an oath if I was to get elected to the Constitution to preserve the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Well, is that what prompted this whole idea of a constitutional restoration tour across the country?
It evolved about 2 years ago because I looked around and in the process of running, I realized, my goodness, there's all these conversations, and they're all very good, most of them, good conversations, but they seem to not be able to listen to each other. And so it's kind of like we have all this great conversation going on, but our country and this world is plunging down in some very deep places that are going to be difficult for our children. And it occurred to me that there's one conversation that ties it all together. It's called, for our nation, it's called the Constitution of the United States. As I began to read it and read the literature behind it and the people who began and made this possible for us, we are at a crossroads of two things are going to happen. We're either going to get our political sensibilities together as a nation. I mean, the Constitution is a contract that ties us all together. If anyone from the school board to the president or anyone that serves in civil office takes that same oath and they're not responding to that oath,
Joe, tell us the details of the tour. What's your plan?
We're going to launch in Augusta, Maine on September 17th, which is the day the Constitution was signed 220 years ago. And it's going to be, we've turned it into a walk. Initially, I was going to do trucks and trailer and sound and stage, and the whole focus was about bringing NGOs and individuals and businesses and people who are willing to make the Constitution a part of their program in their communities, get parents to buy maybe 10 constitutions and bring them home and have Constitution parties. So the whole idea is basically being a messenger of this and hoping that people would pick it up and find different ways to bring it into their community and into their family and into their lives, because we're the bosses.
How long is this going to take, Joe?
1 year. It's a 14,000-mile walk.
My goodness. So you're going Maine to where?
Maine, Montpelier, Concord, New Hampshire, Boston, to each of the capitals, and we'll be stopping in communities in between. Like Montpelier is about an eight-day walk. And I'm leading it, but I'm inviting anybody and everybody to be part of it, to walk, to help, you know, carry. We have a Constitution flag that we've developed for the time being, to a banner, and so I'm hoping that people that will walk, run, to help carry that and make it happen. 14,000 miles is a long ways, but I'm confident we can do it. I've done these kind of walks in the past with Native Americans.
Are you going from Constitution Day to Constitution Day?
Yes, sir.
Great.
I'm going to arrive in Washington, D.C. on September 17th, 2008.
Well, now, how in the world are you going to do all that and keep your job?
I'm not.
You're not?
I'm going to keep my job, that is.
My goodness.
Job this week, yeah.
When I was at a hard decision?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't hard at all.
Why? I mean, you got to live.
And that gets provided for. I'm not worried about that. It's really about a personal journey. I'm on a personal journey to discover my country. I think that's really the important part of the whole thing, you know?
when you end the tour on Constitution Day in 2008, what do you hope to have accomplished?
I would hope to have accomplished having put Constitution books in the hands of young people and elders and anyone out there, and just that suggestion. And I've, quite frankly, I've gotten some interesting responses already from people that have called me up and said, you know, you talked to me about this. And then the next day I went, the guy out in California does swap meets, and he called me 2 this morning. I'm driving along about 2 this morning, and he says, Joe, this is Larry. I helped him get a tire, but we talked about the Constitution a lot. He said, I went to a swap meet before I went home. Thanks for getting me on the road. I went to a swap meet, and he said the first thing I saw was a Constitution framed, and he said, that's it for me. He says, I'm sold. You know, it's just, they just kind of put the suggestion there, and all of a sudden something happens, and they go, boom, and the relevancy becomes apparent, you know?
Well, this strikes me as really an astounding story of conscientious citizenship. And I want to ask you along the walk to check in with us every once in a while and let us tell people how you're doing and what you're finding out about people's understanding of the Constitution.
Well, I will. We have a website people can go to, ConstitutionRestorationTour.com.
Well, for more information on the tour for our listeners, you also can go to ConstitutionRestorationTour.com, or you can check in with us at StateOfBelief.com. We've got a link to that site. Joe Labonte, it really is a pleasure talking with you. I appreciate you listening to our show and getting in touch with us, telling us about this. We wish you the very best of luck throughout the year as a good and faithful and active citizen. Thanks for being with us on State of Belief.
Thank you for having me, Reverend Gaddy, and thank you for your show.
Up next, how's your nose for news? Are you able to spot a fake story in the midst of several real ones? Another edition of Choose the News is coming right up. Stay tuned. I'm Welton Gaddy, and this is State of Belief on Air America Radio.
Hey, the religious right is neither. State of Belief on Air America Radio.
Welcome back. This is State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy. We've got some news about an event for our listeners in the New York area. That's coming up in just a minute. But right now, it's time for Choose the News, the State of Belief game show where we read 4 religion-related news stories and ask our listener contestant to tell us which one is completely made up. We'll meet today's player in just a minute, but first, let's see who's reading this week's stories. State of Belief's consulting producer, Thayer Picar, is here.
Hiya, Welton.
Show producer, Brendan McDonald.
Hey, Welton.
Media relations associate for the Interfaith Alliance, William Blake.
Great to be back, Welton.
And manager of our First Freedom First program, Eric Schutt.
Hey, thanks, Welton.
Now, our contestant is on the line from Las Vegas, Nevada. I haven't met him yet. His name is James McNally. Jim, welcome to Choose the News.
Hi, Reverend. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for joining us. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a bartender here in Las Vegas. I work out at the pool at the Tropicana Hotel.
I bet you do more counseling than most religious leaders.
I do. I give a lot of advice.
Well, now, how do you listen to us?
I listen to you on XM, satellite radio. And I mean, I listen to you religiously from 7 to 8.
We really do appreciate it. And I hope that you will keep listening even after you get to know us a little better on this segment. Let's go over the rules again, just so everybody's clear. We're going to read 4 stories. And if you, Jim, correctly tell us which one is not true, then We've got a State of Belief prize package to send to you, including our First Freedom First material. Isn't that right, Eric?
It is.
Jim, are you ready to try this?
I think I'm ready to go.
Okay, let's hear the news. Thaler?
Southern Baptist Convention is taking up another cause in Washington, getting Congress to regulate cigarettes.
I would believe almost anything you said, beginning with Southern Baptist, but let's let me not comment on this. Brendan, what's your story?
Okay, a man charged with drug possession says his use of marijuana is protected by freedom of religion.
William?
The Transportation Safety Administration has added turbines to a list of prohibited items on domestic aircraft.
And Eric?
The Church of Scientology is facing criminal charges in Belgium for unlawful practices.
Okay, Jim, which one of those is not true?
Well, which one is not true? I believe the Church of Scientology probably is in trouble in Belgium. They're in trouble in Germany. I think the first one, the cigarettes and the Baptists.
Thaler?
It is true. The Southern Baptists were joined by other religious denominations in calling for legislation that would let the government regulate cigarettes. It's part of the Faith United Against Tobacco campaign that started in 2002 and includes Christian, Jewish, and Muslim groups.
See, Jim, I told you, when it starts like that, you need to believe almost anything that comes after what Southern Baptists are doing. Well, look, let's try again.
Oh, boy, this is difficult, huh?
It
How
is.
About the guy that said he smokes marijuana because of religion?
All right. Now, that guy is not Brendan, but Brendan has the story.
No, that guy is Hawaiian James Kimmel, and that story is true. The 72-year-old James Kimmel, not to be confused with Jimmy Kimmel, has already pleaded no contest after police found more than 2 pounds of marijuana in his house, but he's convinced that the charges will be dropped following his appeal, which claims the marijuana is part of a religious sacrament for the Religion of Jesus Church, which Kimmel himself founded in 1969. He faces a 10-year sentence if convicted.
Good grief. You see how much you can learn on this show now? Jim,
yeah,
let's
I'm
go at it again.
I know the Church of Scientology is in trouble in Germany, and I should have thought, well, they probably aren't in trouble in two countries. So let's say the Church of Scientology is not in trouble in Belgium.
Eric?
Jim, I've got bad news for you. That story is true. A Belgian prosecutor wants the Church of Scientology to stand trial for fraud and extortion and be labeled a criminal organization. The charges stem from a 10-year probe of Scientology's European office in Brussels. An administrative court will decide whether to press the charges, which Scientology officials say they would fight.
Now, Jim, I have a feeling that there is a little bit of trickery here because there's been a story on turbines in the news an awful lot. So, William, what is the story again that you read?
Yeah, you know, this is the story that is made up, but it's not entirely made up. Turbines are not prohibited, but they are now subject to search. The Transportation Safety Administration enacted the policy last month and has set off an uproar in the Sikh community. Sikh groups say that the policy goes against an agreement they made with the TSA 6 years ago that would allow Sikhs to wear turbans through airport metal detectors and would not be searched unless the detector beeped.
Now, Jim, I think that this was one of the more difficult choose the news segments that we've done because you showed a knowledge of almost every one of these stories, if not every one of them. And you got tricked because of one or two words in that story. And so my sense is that fairness dictates that you win the prize of the First Freedom First materials.
Oh, great.
Hey, listen, man, thank you for listening out in Las Vegas. Tell your customers to listen to us. It's great visiting with you.
Oh, I will. Keep up the good work, and I'll be listening.
Now, before we go, I want to bring Eric back to the microphone. As I mentioned earlier, Eric is the manager of our First Freedom First program, an initiative to safeguard our First Amendment rights. Eric's got some information on an event that may be of interest to our listeners in the New York City area. Eric, will you tell us what's going on there?
Yeah, thanks, Welton. Well, as you know, we're really excited about this night coming up, a constitutional comedy night this Wednesday in Manhattan. We've worked with a group called Laughing Liberally to put together a church-state-themed comedy night in New York City on September 19th at 8 p.m. It's at the Tank at the south end of Manhattan, 279 Church Street. That's between Franklin and White. It should be a fun time, so I really hope that everyone in New York can come out. If you have any questions about the event, you can visit our website, firstfreedomfirst.org. The calendar and events section has this night listed on it. And you could also send me an email at questions@firstfreedomfirst.org. I'll be there, so you can meet me, come out, have a few laughs. It'll be a good time. I hope to see some people out there.
I've got to ask you, Eric, you mentioned laughing liberally. Can you laugh conservatively?
Well, I think you can, but I'm not sure that an organization has started to try to do that yet.
Well, that's this Wednesday, September 19th at 8 p.m. It's at the Tank on Church Street in Manhattan. If you're in the area, come on out and have a good time that will help support our First Freedom First program. It'll give you a good laugh for the evening and perhaps help all of us generate more attention and more enthusiasm in our attention for the First Amendment to the Constitution, and particularly the guarantee of our first freedom, which is religious freedom. Well, that's our show for this week. If you want to be a contestant on Choose the News, and who wouldn't, go to the Contact Us page at stateofbelief.com and send us an email. Just put Choose the News in the subject line. Or call us at 212-871-8280. That's 212-871-8280. State of Belief is produced by the Interfaith Alliance Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Members of the Interfaith Alliance make this show possible. So, if you like what you've heard today, think about becoming a member yourself. We need people like you. Go to interfaithalliance.org to learn more. Next week, a conversation with the rabbi who made quite an impression with his speech to the Islamic Society of North America. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy, and that's State of Belief.
Billy Ray was a preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along.
State of Belief, religion and radio done differently.
Through the backyard we go walking, then he looked into my eyes. Lord knows to my surprise.